So I'm Lewis Stryber. So I'm, the Records and Information Manager at New South Wales Treasury. But today I'm talking about some research I did outside of work, but very much related to work. So I finished my Masters of Science in Information Management last year. And as part of that, I had to pick a research project. So that's what I'll be talking about. So my background is really in records and information and document management. So I worked for New South Wales Treasury and the ABC, which so a state agency and a federal agency, governed by their respective Archives Act. Back in Scotland, I worked in oil and gas in the private sector, but really heavily regulated companies, so oil and gas engineering. And when I was coming to pick a master's project, an information management related master's project, originally for about 2 years, I thought, I'm going to look at paper, I'm going to explore how people are getting rid of paper. And then just coincidentally at the time at work, I was sort of going through a digitization process, and I thought, oh, this seems too much like my actual job, so I don't really want to look at it. So I'd like to do something interesting. So I thought, something I know absolutely nothing about, startups. Technology startups. I thought, I wonder how these tiny little agile technology startups, how they handle information management, given that they probably don't really have any serious compliance issues to worry about. So I'm going to talk to you just a little bit about how I sort of designed the research, and then I'm going to talk about the findings. And I think the findings, what these companies are doing, is sort of quite interesting and sort of reflects, as Sally mentioned, the shift that we're seeing in the staff that are joining our agencies and our organisations. And as Nicola mentioned, you know, you've got some very, very information savvy customers, very smart. They know what they want and they know what they're doing. They've got their own ideas about information management. So the research looked at four Sydney-based technology startups, and they were all working in sort of software development or app development. So one of them was working on a public transport app, one of them was working in recruitment, one of them was building a business intelligence tool, and the other one was, let me share, working in asset management. So just before I start, just to define startup. So I had a look in the academic literature, and there's actually no real definition of startup. There's actually sort of some dispute over the spelling of startup as well, whether it should have a hyphen, whether it's all one word. I went with what I believe is the most grammatically correct. So couldn't really follow a definition, so I had to use this sort of looser definition here, which comes from a book called The Lean Startup, which is just a sort of pop business book. And then I set up my own rules for what I consider to be a technology startup. So I said it could have no more than 10 people. It could have existed for no longer than 5 years. And it had to be working, for my research, it had to be working with information in some way. And it had to be working with information in a scalable way. So that potentially the number of customers they had could increase by, say, 10 or 100 times, and they wouldn't need to hire 10 or 100 times more staff. So my assumption there was that if they were doing something scalable with information management, then really they were doing something sort of innovative or novel. And my idea here was that if they were doing something with innovative or novel with the information they were managing as their product, then perhaps they were using that to manage their business information, their own internal information, in an innovative or novel way. So I was really interested, although the companies were working with really cool products and really cool apps, I was really interested in how they handled the sort of boring stuff, the business information. So I had to define what exactly it was I was interested in. So I was interested really in information that was primarily for internal use, that allowed the organization to work and to grow, to operate. So in some way it represented organizational knowledge. And yes, they needed it to do their job. And that's opposed to product information, which is customer-facing. And that's, so in the case of, let's say, a transport app, that was the data that they were feeding their customers and that they were processing in their own way. So I've just got a little example here. So a hypothetical sort of example company, WeatherCo, so they make a weather app. So for their business information, we'd say things like the source code, the contract, financial transactions, just everything that keeps it running. And then for the product information, let's say they're pulling in a whole load of raw weather data, then they're doing something kind of clever to that raw weather data, and then they show it to you, the customer, on your nice app. And the idea, yes, is that if they're doing something special over here, are they bringing it back? Are they doing it with their business information? Are they parsing that corporate knowledge in some way? And just one last thing, just about sort of my, before I started the research. So I wanted to find out, because I just didn't know how startups would manage information, because all I'd seen of information management was in really heavily governed, really compliant organizations. So I just had no idea what they were doing. So I turned to Google Scholar and tried to find out if anybody else had looked at how startups were handling information management. And nobody really was. So there was a literature review, some Italian academics had a look to see if they could find anybody looking at how startups manage information management. They couldn't really find anything. There's a really great paper about sort of human capital in new ventures, which are sort of equivalent to startups, and how they are managing their knowledge, but that's from 1994, so not particularly useful. A great paper here, which actually doesn't, it sort of examines how a startup might benefit from using a cloud-based system, but it doesn't actually talk to anyone in the startup. It just proposes that, hey, cloud systems are quite useful, and it's small companies would benefit from them. And then just at the bottom, there were a couple of studies done on startups and how they're managing information, but they were sort of done just as mass surveys. So I couldn't find a single case where anybody had actually ever spoken to anyone in a startup and asked them how they were managing their information. So I thought it would be a really good idea to talk to people who worked in startups. So I interviewed the five founders of four startups in Sydney. And I interviewed them in person and sort of had a semi-structured interview with them. So I had some preset questions, but I kind of followed them wherever they were going, and when they used different terms for things, I sort of started to adopt their terms and let them sort of lead. So I asked them about themselves, I asked them about their background and their history of information management. I asked them about their business and the product that they were building. And then I asked them questions sort of loosely based on a shortened information life cycle, so creation, storage, retrieval, disposal, which some of you might be angry at because you don't think that's proper information life cycle, but I just tried to sort of categorize the questions and take them on a little journey through their information's life cycle. And then after I interviewed them, I took a piece of information that they'd mentioned during the interview, and I asked them to show me how they would find that information. And I took notes, and I recorded all of the interviews, and then I went home and I transcribed all the interviews. And then I went through all the interviews with highlighter, and I highlighted different themes in different colors, which is a grounded theory approach. And really this approach, because it was from a master's research, I had to sort of take it from an academic point of view, but really, as you're probably hearing me talk about that, you think that's really not much different from business analysis, which we're all involved in our organizations. And really that's exactly what I was doing. I was doing sort of business analysis on these startups to understand how they were handling their information. So now I've talked all about setting the research up, I'm going to talk about my actual findings, which I think is much more interesting. So I'm just going to talk through the findings in terms of the information lifecycle that I outlined. So these startups, all working in software, all really technology-focused, digital-savvy. It's probably no surprise that they were entirely digital, so I couldn't find a single case where anybody was managing paper, which is a relief, and especially since that's what I was doing at work at the time, and I didn't want to think about it. It was very good. Two of the startups actually didn't have a dedicated office space. They sort of all worked remotely, and occasionally they'd hire an office, maybe just for a week. So it makes sense that their information was always entirely digital and always sort of stored centrally and always accessible, because they wouldn't be able to just pass documents to one another. The participants all had a really informal relationship with information. So at various points, you know, I spent a lot of time arguing with myself over the using the term business information. I'd considered other terms like internal information or operational information. put a lot of thought into business information, and then when I interviewed them, they'd start calling it stuff or things, and they talk about chucking it somewhere, which is really different to the way that I've worked with information, where you're filling out a transmittal, you're submitting information. And so they had this really informal relationship with the way they talked about it, and it was just sort of an extension of their thoughts, and they just threw it around. And I think if I was interviewing or talking to someone and they were using those kind of terms, I think that normally would betray sort of a lack of respect for information. But these people, these were all founders of their startups, and the startups were built to manage information in some way. You know, they obviously have some respect, some value for information, but they've just got a really different relationship with it than I have with information, and certainly that I've seen in more formal organizations. They all really didn't like documents. So they were using lots of systems where they just kept data, and they were quite happy to do that. There was this idea that documents were really for other people. So anytime they produced a document, it was for a client, it was for an investor, it was for another agency, another company that they were working with. But really everything they kept, wherever possible, they tried to keep it in data. So there was one company, they were using sort of, they were creating documents, but they were just keeping them all in an online document editor, and they were keeping them in a JSON format rather than exporting them to a .doc or any other type of format. And the idea was, this sort of said, we haven't thought about it yet, but by keeping it in a data format, maybe one day in the future we can do something with it. We can plug it into some machine learning. And if we did it with the document, you'd have all the formatting and things to think about. So yeah, we've got this idea that one day we'll do something interesting with our business information, but not yet. They hadn't really put their thought into it yet. One startup was making just really extensive use of a wiki, like I'd never seen before. And the way they had sort of sold it to their employees is really, they said, it's your job to put everything you do in this wiki, to document every decision you're making. And this is the source of all of our knowledge. And yes, on email, was this idea that email was too formal, which was a bit of a surprise. So really, all of the startups were using chat applications, and they were using them just for absolutely everything. They were sharing files in the chat apps. They were talking about all the things they were doing, and really just not using email at all, certainly not internally. And one of the startups had 6 employees, and they only had 1 email address, and the email address was hello@company name, and they used it for signing up to things, and they used it for emailing customers. But yeah, they didn't email each other whatsoever. One of the participants actually said in the interview, email sucks, which was quite a good quote. And I don't necessarily disagree. And the last point here was something I'd actually never heard of before. It was quite exciting. But there was a team of software developers at one of the startups, and they were all writing to the source code every day. But rather than set up any sort of rules or procedures that they followed, they used this tool called a linter, which is sort of an automated tool that runs on software code, and it basically checks. You build your rules into the linter, and the linter checks what you're writing. And it says, hey, I don't like the format of this. It doesn't comply with what we've agreed. So it basically puts any mistakes or anything you're doing that's not compliant, it makes it sort of red. And while it's red and it's an error, it won't let you write to the source code. So you've got to fix your mistakes. So you can put in rules like every 10 lines of code, you have to put a comment in to explain what you're doing. So if you go 11 lines, that's it. You've broken the rule, and you can't save back to the source code. That's something I'd never heard of before. And it was a really interesting way to see a rule just enforced automatically. Moving on to storage. So all of the startups were using cloud-based, off-the-shelf, they'd tick the same box to give away all their information rights. Just using tools off-the-shelf like Dropbox, Slack, Confluence. And I was a little bit disappointed, actually, because the companies had put so much effort into building their tools, and I sort of had hoped somebody would have built some magic document information management system behind the scenes, and they hadn't kind of realized how amazing this thing was, and then I would discover it, and together maybe change it up. But no, everybody was just using Dropbox. Which is okay, that's fine. They were putting all their effort into the product, not the business information, the behind the scenes stuff. So really no customization whatsoever. You know, they changed a few options, but they hadn't done a huge amount. And yet, a real focus on chat and collaboration. So one of the startups, they used Slack to chat, and they made all the decisions there, and they shared files there. And one of the employees of the startup actually had his own sort of channel in the app, and he just spoke to himself all day, just chatted to himself, thinking about this problem, I don't know how to solve it. And then he'd come back later in the day, he'd reply to himself, oh, got it, all I had to do was this. And he literally just, you know, reams and reams and reams of chat to himself. But the benefit of using an app like that is that it's really searchable, so it's self-recording, it's really well indexed. So anytime you sort of, you know, vaguely thinking about, trying to think, you know, find something that you thought about before, because he documented all of his thoughts, he'd go back, search it, find exactly what he, and, you know, look at the context around the time that he was solving that problem or doing that thing. And what I also found, which probably isn't too surprising, is that I didn't find a single instance of a policy or a procedure or anything written down, any rules or governance whatsoever about managing business information. So the rules that that's not to say they don't have rules, they do have rules, but they're very ad hoc, they're very informal. And one of the participants actually, he described them as having rules for managing business information, but it was kind of gut feel. You do what's right. Another participant said they weren't really worried about their employees managing things wrongly because he tends to only hire people who are pretty sensible. But again, so as I mentioned earlier, one of the startups, what they had done is they had really explicitly said to everybody who they worked with in the team, they said, it's your job to manage and share this information wherever you can. So if we've got a wiki, you've got to put it in the wiki. If we're using this chat, you have to chat to us. You can't send me a text message or you can't send me an email. It's got to be in chat, and it's your job to tell us what you're doing. So that way everything's captured. And then they sort of had sort of vague rules. So that, you know, they're using lots of different systems that aren't connected and talking to each other to manage their business information. So they have kind of vague rules about, okay, well, this type of information lives in this system, and you wouldn't put it in Dropbox. You know, you wouldn't take data from the system, make it into a PDF, and, you know, store it in a document file management system. When they were using Dropbox, so when they did have some documents, slide decks and things that they were keeping, they did have sort of really well-defined file plans, actually, surprisingly, but file plans that they just changed whenever they felt like it. So they didn't have, they sort of set them up and they kind of had a rule and then they'd just change it whenever. And it didn't seem appropriate anymore. So one of the participants, Carl was having, I think, a bad day when I spoke to him. So Carl, in a previous life, before starting his startup, he was an information architect. So he had a really good idea of how things should be, but it just wasn't happening because they were focusing on their product, and it's kind of understandable. And there was this idea across all of the startups that maybe when we get to a certain size or a certain age, then we'll have rules. But we don't need them quite yet. And just moving on to retrieval. So how did they find things? I kind of wondered the same thing. So it's pretty much through search. So one of the participants said 99% of the time it's always search. And that's because things are so well indexed in the systems they're using. They're really searchable. It's also because if you were trying to navigate to find something and they don't have any rules, it's really a bit of a mess. It's quite difficult to find things by navigating. Although they're using search for everything, they don't have any federated search because they just haven't built anything to manage their business information. So they'll go to the system that seems most likely, that piece of information's in, they'll search. If it's not there, they'll go to the next most likely system and then the next most likely system. So it's not terribly efficient. Everybody's able to access all information and collaborate freely. So there are no permission controls. I could find two examples of permission controls, but really everything is open to everyone within the startup, which I found really interesting. The only exceptions to that, one exception was one of the startups had a new intern and they didn't want to overwhelm the intern. So they gave them really limited access to like one folder they'd set up just for this person. And the other example was one of the startups was they'd taken on a new piece of work and it was too much for them, so they brought in a third party to help. This was the startup that made the huge wiki, so they gave access to certain parts of the wiki and they let the other company in, but they locked everything else down so the third party couldn't come across anything, couldn't steal any of their ideas. There was this idea across all of the startups that although they weren't doing anything yet with their business information, they weren't sort of leveraging it really, other than using it when they had problems. They had this idea that maybe at some point they might use machine learning, natural language processing. They might get some unanticipated use out of their information. And for that reason, they were kind of just keeping everything they could keep. And there was a couple of examples where they were using sort of data visualization on things that they had, and they were sort of cobbling some things together and getting some value out of it. And there was this idea that they really wanted to focus on that at some point, but they just hadn't reached that point yet. And really interestingly, I couldn't find a single case where anything was ever permanently lost. So despite sort of things being quite messy, you know, they always found what they were looking for. They were always able to, you know, fulfill their information need. So I've just got a couple of quotes about retrieval. So Robert was the founder of the startup that had the really extensive wiki, and they made part of that wiki available. But it really sort of, I love this quote, "I'm all for information wants to be free, but a magician never gives all his tricks away." But this idea that there's something special about his organization's business information, that there's some, you know, some magic there. And then this was really good. So this was actually in one of the chat apps that one of the startups was using. So they were looking for a file, they were looking for a script that they had used about 6 months ago, and it was supposed to be stored in a specific place in Dropbox, and it wasn't there. And they were really desperately trying to find this script because they knew it was about, I don't know, maybe a day's work to recreate the script so they could run this process on their server. They couldn't find it anywhere. Last minute, they sort of searched in the chat app desperately, and they found it along with this message, which I just loved. But yes, so nobody ever permanently lost anything. Even this was probably the worst case of something going missing. So moving on to disposal. So how did they dispose of their information? They kind of didn't. In fact, they really didn't. There were some exceptions. Humphrey's pretty adamant that there's no need to delete anything at all, and that there's value in it, so why would I delete it? So I asked Thomas, do you ever delete anything? I'm not into espionage. He really didn't like the idea that you'd be hiding things, destroying things within your own company. Rarely destroyed. And they're only getting rid of things either when it's very old or when it's very wrong. And it could be wrong because it's very old. So things like code. So actually something I hadn't thought about, but in their source code, they'd comment parts of their code out that were superseded, and they'd maybe wait a couple of months, and if they didn't need it again, they would actually just get rid of that piece of code. If they didn't think it represented any sort of value, any knowledge, they'd get rid of it. And the other example of destroying things, one of the founders of one of the startups is really pro-privacy, and he made a point of saying, well, he actually ran the real-time public transport app, so he developed that app, and he made an effort not to collect certain information about people using it, and then even with those sort of safeguards in place, he's not collecting really sort of personal information from your device and from your account or anything like that. He still deletes everybody's sort of journey logs and travel logs and everything they've searched after 30 days. He really didn't like the idea that he could potentially sort of de-anonymize people. So he was wiping those away after 30 days. But other than that, really, really low destruction. So those are sort of the findings. And then because I work in sort of governed information management, roles. That's been my background. I really wanted to sort of pull some of these findings out into sort of implications for records and information management. So I've got sort of some cheeky questions here that I think are sort of worth discussing, and certainly what I've seen in those startups. And obviously they operate in a different environment to all of us. You know, they've got really sort of, they don't have to worry so much about compliance, although they might soon with the privacy regulations coming in. So they're not disposing of anything, and they're not disposing of anything, you know, because you might be able to reuse it. I think if I had the role I have now in a private company, I think I wouldn't get rid of anything ever. I think there is, although we're not quite there yet, you know, in a few years, we've already seen sort of machine learning, you know, be able to parse huge amounts of documents and pull out sort of insights. And I think in a few more years, that's going to be a lot more commercially available. We're going to be able to, you know, in your EDRMS with 300,000 documents that nobody ever sort of looks at, you'll be able to just parse some really interesting bits of value out of there. I think that's coming. I don't think we're there yet. How about reducing or getting rid of completely access controls? So, you know, I think we've probably all come across the situation where information is more locked down than it needs to be. I can think of an example where in a previous role we got a request into our mailbox for the EDRMS team so that we could lock down a file. When we linked through to the file, it was the morning tea schedule. So it should only be visible to a really select group of people. You know, when you think about the time wasted in locking things down, you know, and then when all the people who have access to the morning tea schedule are off sick, you know, somebody else needs to see the morning tea schedules, you've got to let them in. So, you know, it's a lot lower to administer. And also there's that value of people coming across information that wasn't originally intended for them. And I think there's a real trend towards that. Certainly with some of the things coming with Office 365 at the moment, we're seeing information sort of expand out of the area of where it was immediately intended to go. Why documents? So there is a real, I still think there is a need for documents. You know, my first job was document controller. I'm collecting here a document that I printed out earlier. You know, documents have value. Documents provide a certain context. They're needed for certain reasons. But documents can be a bit of a crutch. And again, I'm sure we've all seen examples of people sort of making documents out of data. If you've got a nice system with an audit log or something, and people pasting that into a Word document and saving the Word document, but the audit log's right there, the rich data. You know, data in an appropriate system can be, you know, is much more valuable than just a document locked away that somebody has to read and interpret themselves. And then the last part here is my cheekiest of the four questions. So what happens to information when you have no rules? So all of the participants in the research, it's really disingenuous to say they had no rules. They just had different rules to what I would have expected. They had less formal rules. They were managing their information. Or if not managing their information, they were sort of managing with their information. They were getting the job done. They were doing what they needed to do. They were finding everything they needed, just in a different way than sort of I would be used to or I would expect. And that's it. That's everything.